Moncrief on News Talk.
Jonathan DeBurker Butler is with us once again to bring us stories from other parts of the world. Good afternoon, Jonathan.
Sean, how you getting on?
Right, California we're going to start with next, where they're going to be handing out tickets to driverless cars.
Yeah, I heard something about the European Union and Elon Musk this morning talking about bringing driverless cars to Europe. But there's blocks here and blocks there, and some people are worried about it skidding on ice in Sweden and all sorts of things. So anyway, it'll be interesting to see what happens in the European Union and over this side of the pond. But they are already all over the place in the United States. I don't know, have you ever used one?
I've never used one, no.
I've seen pictures of friends of mine using it, all right, and they say it's a very strange phenomenon, but you get used to it after a while.
Yeah.
But it must be utterly weird. But anyway,
yeah.
Obviously these things cause problems, right? Problems that humans aren't any strangers to either, and that is that they violate traffic laws. And up until now, the police haven't been able to ticket them because you've got to serve someone with the ticket, and because nobody's driving the car, they don't really know what to do. So, for example, there was an incident last September where police officers in a city called San Bruno, which is a city south of San Francisco, they noticed that a Waymo AV was making an illegal U-turn at a light directly in front of them. They stopped the car, but they weren't able to issue the ticket without a driver to give it to. So instead, what they did was contacted the company about the glitch, and it went from there.
Yeah.
So now legislation has been drafted and it's been brought in on the 1st of July, where the companies that own these autonomous vehicles will be fined. Now, the curious thing here is that I haven't seen numbers yet, so I don't know how much an AV is going to get for breaking a red light, for example,
yeah,
or what's going to happen if, as has happened in the past, they just shut down and end up blocking traffic or blocking ambulances or fire trucks and all sorts of things, which they have done. So it'll be interesting to see. I think the state of California is going to have to put its money where its mouth is and hit them with big fines. Otherwise, they'll just laugh in their faces and
yeah,
say,
because
well,
it's,
you know,
it's a large
$100,
company.
What's that to us, you know?
And but it's kind of puzzling that these autonomous cars are breaking the rules of the road. I thought they were programmed to not do that.
I know, but I mean, it seems that, so there was a power outage in San Francisco, apparently last September, I think it was. And that caused chaos. They were stopping in all sorts of places that they weren't supposed to be stopping. I don't know if there was something wrong with the communications or their sat-nav or whatever it was, but they are not all of them, obviously, but, you know, in a few instances, they have caused problems. So, you know, it has to be dealt with.
Yeah, okay. And they come into effect, as you say, the start of July. And the companies that run these, especially, I suppose, as taxi services, have they objected to this or said anything about it?
Not that I've seen, to be honest with you. But I'm sure they're not amazingly happy about it. But it's sort of needs must, I suppose.
Yeah. Right. China, we're going to go to China and tariffs. But it's tariffs on African countries, or they've lifted them all.
They've got rid of them. Yeah. So this is off the back of a measure that they started off in December of 2024. They dropped tariffs for 33 African nations, and now they've added the other 20, bar one, right? So there's 53 countries now where they are going to take up a zero tariff policy, and that'll be in place until the 30th of April 2028, right? They brought these in on the 1st of May. Now, I don't know why they chose that number or that particular date in particular, and we don't know at this stage what is going to happen on the 30th of April 2028, so it remains to be seen. But they have been broadly welcomed, as you can imagine, because it will open up markets, particularly for the agricultural sector or agricultural sectors in many African countries who will be able to, you know, export food and into this market. So I suppose it's broadly good news, but you'd wonder, you know, what's the idea behind it? You know, there's always something behind this that's going on.
What's in it for China?
Exactly. I mean, obviously China have, for the last 10 or 20 years, particularly the last 10 years, have been investing a lot of money in a lot of countries in Africa. And they do have a large trade deficit with that country. I think it's something like 106 billion, or not with that country, with that continent, my sincere apologies. Something like 106 billion. So it's a lot of money. I would say the fact that Donald Trump brought in some tariffs last August, I think they were up to 30% in some cases. Now, an awful lot of them have been brought down because of Supreme Court rulings to about 10%. But I'd say it's China kind of saying to the world and saying to people, you know, saying to these African countries, we are your friend. These white European people that have been exploiting you for centuries and these Americans who have been exploiting you for centuries aren't allowing you to trade properly. We are your friend. Trade with us. We'll invest in you. You know, this kind of thing.
They're not wrong.
No, they're not.
But it's who didn't get the tariffs dropped? Who was the one unfortunate country?
Yeah, so there was one country, Eswatini, down in the south of the continent, landlocked country, very small. But Eswatini is one of 12 countries that recognises the arch rival of China, which is, of course, Taiwan. And in fact, recently, the leader of Taiwan, I think just last week, Lai Ching-te, he had to cancel a trip to Eswatini after three African countries, I think it was the Seychelles, Mauritius and Madagascar, barred his aircraft from flying over their territories. Now, remarkably, he actually ended up getting there, and the state visit was still happened. The Taiwanese authorities didn't give details on how he managed to get there.
Yeah.
Obviously, they didn't want to throw countries under the bus or whatever. But he did manage to get there, and the state visit passed off quite successfully.
Yeah. Yeah. What these countries, these African countries, will be exporting to China, are there kind of general areas of things, or is it more like raw materials?
It's more raw materials, right? So this is where the problem is for a lot of people, right? So the top exports are oils, minerals, and metals, okay?
Yeah.
From places like Angola, which has a lot of oil, DRC, which we know is flooded with all the minerals. It should be, like, the DRC should be the richest country in the world, not one of the richest countries in the world, but it's not, or its people aren't, at least. So they get an awful lot of that, and then it gets sent back to them from the factories in China through manufactured goods, machinery, electronics, vehicles.
Yeah.
So the argument would be, if there was a way that these African countries could, or some of these African countries could, get themselves sorted out and produce these products with the raw materials that they have, then, you know, they might be in a better place. Now, whether this is a step in the direction of allowing them to do that, I don't know into the future, but that remains to be seen.
Well, also perhaps a bit of acuteness on the part of China, and like they also already have own a large chunk of the microchip market and the raw materials for that. And countries like the DRC again are exporting the raw materials to make that.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, okay. Interesting move. Right, we're going to stay in the African continent, though. Uganda, we're going to now. And a man has been sentenced to death. This is a pretty horrific story.
It's a pretty grim story. And I have to be honest with you, I have been looking at this over the last 4 or 5 weeks since the story began. I'm kind of looking, well, will I, won't I? But I thought at this stage that I would. So the incident itself, or the crime itself, happened on the 2nd of April. It was a 38-year-old man, a man by the name of Christopher Onyum. He entered an early childhood development program, so a creche, basically, with a kitchen knife, and he ended up killing four toddlers. They were aged between one and two. It was absolutely horrific. Now, he ran away, I think. He managed to escape for a while, but when he was caught, he said that he had done it as a human sacrifice in the hope that it would make him rich. So there was obviously some sort of an imbalance here, mental imbalance, or something going on here. And in fact, that's what his defence has pleaded. He entered, originally said that he was guilty, and then he entered a plea of not guilty through insanity. But the judge was having none of it. So this was Justice Alice Kauka who basically sentenced him to death. She said that, "I hereby sentence him to such a death and she ruled, and that got cheers from the crowd that had gathered there. And she said, "I have also considered that the conflict has not shown any remorse at all, because I would have at least expected an apology from to the families of the babies. So apparently he hasn't done it. So he has been sentenced to death by hanging. Now, he has 14 days to appeal the sentence."
Mm.
Okay, not the actual ruling, but the sentence. I can't see him being successful.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't use the death penalty often in Uganda, but it is still legal.
Yeah.
Last time they used it was 2005, I think.
Yeah.
Fairly heinous crime. So.
Yeah, my word. Right, Mali, we're going to go to next. A lot of African stories there. What's happening there? Like, what's not happening there? Yeah. Is the country on the verge of civil war?
I think it's been in it for going back at least to about 2011, 2012. It seems to be in a constant state of civil war. I mean, the latest turning point, I suppose, was back in 2020 when there was a military coup, and you have the General Assimi Goïta, who's the president there for now, but he's under severe threat. There are various factions within the country, both Islamic extremists and separatist movements that want him out. So for very different reasons, he's under pressure, and they're putting him under pressure. And about 10 days ago, so not last weekend, but the weekend before last, there were coordinated attacks. These Islamists and separatists, they seem to be working together, again, for different agendas, which in and of itself could be complicated in the future if they indeed ever get rid of the military regime here. But they coordinated attacks, and I suppose the headline from those attacks was they had managed to assassinate the defense minister. So that spooked the government, as you can imagine. Mm. So their natural reaction was to come out and say, "Oh well, we're going to cripple you. You know, we're absolutely going to go to town on you, and we're going to bring you down." But it seems that in various parts of the country, they are simply not in control. So there's a city with a population of about 100,000 to the south of the capital Bamako. It's called Sego. And it has been completely encircled by these militant groups. So they have control of that now. Other sections of the country, they look to have control of. And there seems to be at least a partial, but relatively full blockade of the capital. At least three of the six roads into the capital are blocked off now. So people can't get out or get in on those roads. So people in that city, and it's a very big city, 3 million people in there, are suffering.
Yeah. Now, are there Russian troops there?
Yeah. So do you remember, so when this all kicked off years ago, there was a French, it's not the Foreign Legion, but there was a French troops there that were helping, and a kind of an alliance of foreign troops. But when Assimi Goïta came in, he kicked the French out. He was advised by several international observers not to, but he went ahead and did it. And then the Wagner group came in. Prigozhin, yeah?
Yeah.
But when Prigozhin had that unfortunate accident, shall we call it, on the airplane. This was incorporated into the Russian military, and it's now known as the Africa Corps. Right, it's essentially the same thing, but in a different name. And they have been helping this military government under Goïta to try and run the country. But they seem to be losing ground in various parts of the country as well. Now, the separatist group, that is the Azawad Liberation Front, have called for the Russians to leave, but they're saying we're not going anywhere until things have calmed down. Uh-huh. But the prospect of that happening is very distant.
Of them leaving, do you think?
Of it calming down.
Yes,
it's just constant chaos there. Who knows where it'll go.
Yeah, indeed. Right, finally, Australia, we're going to go back to. Now, this is a story you told us about before, where this finally sentencing of a court case. But I suppose you better remind us of the story, the initial story.
Yeah,
so again, a bizarre
story, isn't it? So this involves a 45-year-old woman from South Australia who faked her child's, who made up a diagnosis of cancer for her 6-year-old child, right? Mm. Her child had some sort of an accident involving his eye. He had to be brought to a specialist. And when she came away from that appointment, she told everybody, "Oh, he's been diagnosed with cancer." And she went to such extremes. I mean, she shaved his head, she shaved his eyebrows, put bandages on his head, put bandages on his hands, put him in wheelchairs. put him in a wheelchair, restricted his movements and, and how much he could play in school. And she was putting drugs and all sorts of things into him. And everybody believed her. Until it was discovered that she was telling a complete and utter lie.
And she was looking for money.
And she was looking for money. This was, it was fraud through pity, if you like. Now, she was caught and she went on trial. Her defence said that during COVID, she became addicted to gambling and she ran up a debt. And this was the motivation for trying to get this money out of people. Initially, her husband was actually charged as well, but it seems that he knew nothing about it. And he's obviously been absolutely devastated by this whole thing. So she's been sentenced now and she's going to get 4 years and 3 months in prison for her trouble. But she will be eligible for parole as early as next April. And it'll be interesting to see if she gets out and what is she going to do. I don't know if there's a restraining order on her now that she can't go near her family or if that's possible, but a bizarre story.
Yeah, and the poor child. Indeed. And this woman hasn't been named, I assume, to protect the child.
No, she hasn't been named and it's exactly for that reason, to protect the child.
Though given that she was on, you know, Facebook or whatever, looking for this money, I assume out there it's easy to find.
I think a lot of people out in the area will know exactly who she is, and you know, it's it wouldn't take long to discover.
God, the poor child. Mm. Right, so what should we look forward to over the next week or so?
Well, I don't know if looking forward to is the right word, but anyway, it's something to look out for. Thursday, there's a lot of elections in the UK, right?
Yeah.
These are going to be big deals.
Yes,
so there's elections in the Scottish Parliament, the Welsh Senate and the English councils. So, you know, Keir Starmer this time next week, this time next week is going to be under a lot of pressure, I think. It's not looking good for him.
Presuming, assuming what direction they go in and to whom.
He's under a massive amount of pressure anyway. Then on Friday, the Giro d'Italia begins. That's the big bicycle race in Italy. For a lot of people, it marks the start of summer. So I thought I'd throw that in there as well. And then on Sunday, May the 10th, the Eurovision opening ceremony will take place. And the first semi-final is next Tuesday. And we won't have a correspondent at it this year, I don't think, will we?
Because
we're not in it.
Oh, right. Are we not?
I don't think we are. Are we? No, we're not.
Oh, of course we're not, because of Gaza, etc.
Various things.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Okay. Right, Jonathan, thanks a million as ever. Jonathan,
thanks,
the Burke Butler there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.